Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Galp Energia's second quarter 2012 results and strategy execution update conference call. I'll now pass the floor to Mr. Tiago Villas-Boas, Head of Investor Relations Division. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Galp Energia's second quarter results and strategy execution update conference call. Joining me today is our CEO, Manuel Ferreira de Oliveira. We'll first address the latest changes to our management team. Afterwards, we will proceed with the second quarter results overview and with a short-term outlook, which will in turn be followed by an update to our strategy execution, and will then be available for Q&A.
Good afternoon to all of you. I want to start today by elaborating on the latest change to our management team. As you know, with the last week completion of the sale of 5% of a 5% stake by Eni to Amorim Energia, and the subsequent exit of Eni from the shareholder agreement in place, our management team changed accordingly. But before that, I would like to thank Claudio De Marco, who took upon him the role of CFO for the last 4 years, working with dedication and professionalism during a transformational time of our company, and for that I want to express publicly my sincere gratitude. I would also like to thank Fabrizio da Sogno, who was in charge of our gas and power division, for all its work for all his work and cooperation in the last few years. To both, we would like to wish all the best in their forthcoming new responsibilities at the Eni Group. I would like to now to refer to our new board members, Luís Palha da Silva and Filipe Silva. Luís Palha da Silva has a well-known and successful experience as CFO and CEO of one of the largest Portuguese corporations, and I'm most pleased to have him joining our management team. Luís will assume the role of Vice President of the Executive Committee, and he will also be leading the refining and marketing business into its new era, as you know, that starts after the commissioning of the hydrocracker during this summer. Filipe Silva, with a remarkable and also well-known career in the financial sector, will take the responsibility of Chief Financial Officer of the company. As for the remaining team, already appointed, elected in April, the responsible for exploration and production business will be Stephen White, who has a long and successful track record in our industry with wide experience and exposure to the E&P business. Carlos Gomes da Silva, part of our management since 2008, will now oversee the gas and power business and the increasingly relevant oil and gas trading activity. Carlos Costa Pina is taking the responsibility of corporate director, responsible for most of the GALP's corporate services, and will also be responsible for our growing biofuels business. We have today, as you can see from these short statements, an experienced and qualified team who will be focused and fully committed to the success of the company and in delivering our commitments that were clearly set up in our recent Capital Markets Day in London. We will continue to deliver the execution of the strategy that in due time we shared with all investors. I also want to welcome two new non-executive members of our board, Sergio Gabrielli Azevedo and Abdul Majid Osman. Sergio Gabrielli was, as all of you know, the CEO of Petrobras until earlier this year, while Abdul Osman worked for the Mozambican government in the 90s and now works in the Mozambican financial sector. These two professionals will largely enrich our board, and their vast experience, track record, values and knowledge of the industry will most contribute to the success of the company. Father, I want you to be informed that a non-executive directors committee was created to advise the board on its international strategy. This committee will be headed by our chairman, Mr. Amorim, and will include Sergio Gabrielli, Batista Sumb, and Abdal Osman, highly respected personalities, respectively in Brazil, in Angola and Mozambique, countries that are key to our strategy. With this brief introduction and reference to the recent changes in our corporate governance, I will now pass the floor to Tiago, which will summarize our quarterly results. I'll come back to you later.
Okay. Thank you, Manuel. Following Manuel's introduction, I would just like to leave here my special thanks to Claudio, not only for his cooperation throughout the last few years, but more importantly for his support and trust. So thank you, Claudio. And now, before starting with the results overview, I remind you that, as usual, we'll be making several forward-looking statements. So I'd like to draw your attention to the disclaimer at the end of the published presentation. So let's now go over to the second quarter results. After seeing some signs of recovery already during the first quarter, we were able to deliver a better performance in the second, while benefiting from some interesting market opportunities. The net income reached 120 million euros, up 79 million quarter on quarter, and 81% above the same period last year, mainly driven by the higher production in Brazil and by the increased volumes of LNG sold. Looking particularly to the E&P business, this quarter was not only marked by the on-track execution of the Lula development project, but also by the continuous focus in exploration. During the second half of the year, we'll step up our exploration campaign with the drilling and completion of BMS-8, Jupiter and Potiguar in Brazil, and with the first well in Portugal onshore. In what regards our refining upgrade project, the hydrocracker commissioning will be carried out during this quarter, the last milestone of this project. Finally, given the current financial market setting, it is important to note our strong financial position that has prevented us from suffering the adverse credit conditions surrounding Iberia. This solid financial position and the flexibility that it provides us is clearly a competitive advantage in today's world. Now, let's start running through our quarterly results in slide number 5. EBITDA grew by over 20% year-on-year, with the positive contribution from all business segments. The 40% increase compared with the first quarter was mainly driven by the refining business. The E&P business continued delivering on production growth in Brazil, with a 40% increase in net entitlement production, more than offsetting the decrease in oil price. The production growth comes, as you know, as the fourth production well connected to the FPSO Cidade Angra dos Reis contributed steadily for the first time this quarter. So we had four production wells contributing to a total average production of 9.2 thousand barrels per day in FPSO Cidade Angra dos Reis. Refining and marketing also posted an increase, contributing with an extra 75 million euros versus the previous quarter, as the overall improvement in benchmark refining margins counterweighted the still challenging performance of the oil marketing business. Benchmark margins moved to a positive ground for the first time since the fourth quarter in 2010. I highlight the fact that our premium to benchmark decreased in the quarter to below $1 per barrel. This decline was mainly due to the non-optimal utilization of the Sines refinery, as the refinery is already optimized for the hydrocracker, which operation, as you know, has not yet started, due to the heavy light spread decline and due to some technical outage. The marketing business continued to be impacted by the difficult situation in Iberia, as the economic recession and the austerity measures in place continued to erode demand, which fell by 7% in Portugal and another 5% in Spain in the second quarter. On the other hand, our small African business continues to perform well. The gas and power business continued benefiting from increased LNG trading opportunities on the back of increased demand from emerging markets and, more importantly, from Japan. Overall depreciations had a positive impact in quarterly results as E&P depreciations decreased. This decrease followed the reserves upward revision at the end of 2011. So all of these effects drove EBIT to grow by over 40% year-on-year, reaching €174 million in the quarter. Below the EBIT line, results were also positively impacted by the lower cost of debt, which is now standing at 4.4%, and by Forex potential gains, which resulted mainly from allocation of available cash in Brazil, as the Brazilian real depreciated against the dollar. These impacts were more than enough to offset the increased minorities, which resulted of the Sinopec deal in Brazil. Concluding with the P&L, second quarter net income stood at €129 million. Moving on to the balance sheet in slide 6. Net debt now stands at €1.2 billion, and it was negatively impacted in the quarter by the working capital needs, by CapEx, and by the dividend payment of €166 million. In what regards working capital, the main driver behind this increase was the change at the suppliers level, with payables going down Q on Q. On CapEx, it amounted to €120 million in the second quarter, with exploration and production accounting for over 70% of the total. Around 50% of the cash was allocated to development activities in Brazil, particularly to the drilling of development wells in the Lula area, while the other 50% was mainly allocated to exploration activities, especially in Mozambique, with the drilling of Coral 1 well in the Mamba complex, with 3D seismic acquisition in the north, and 2D seismic along the remaining area 4. Net debt to equity stood at 18%, within in the financial policy we have defined, while net debt to EBITDA was of 1.3 times. Now, in slide 7 and our short-term outlook, we expect three-quarter working interest production to be in line with second Q, standing at 26,000 barrels per day. I highlight that at the end of the quarter, the FPSO Cidade Angra dos Reis was almost at full production, with an average gross production in June of 110,000 barrels per day, BOE. As for refining, we maintain a cautious outlook. Despite the higher margins in July, when benchmark margin was close to $4 per barrel, we still maintain a cautious outlook, considering the volatility that we expect to occur in this quarter. In the oil marketing business, despite the typical three-quarter seasonality effect, volume should remain depressed, so below last year's level, in line with what we have seen in the first half of the year. As far as the gas and power business is concerned, natural gas volume should remain stable Q-on-Q, supported by demand from the electrical segment and by volumes sold through our trading activity. All in all, we are set to deliver a full-year EBITDA of around €1 billion, within the guidance provided before, assuming a conservative refining margin level and an oil price averaging around $100 per barrel in the second half of the year. Thank you very much for your attention. Manuel will now proceed with the remaining part of the presentation.
Thank you, Tiago. Let me try and summarize our operating activities throughout the company and give you an overview about an update of our strategy execution. Let me first look at Brazil, and in particular to the Lula development project that continues to proceed according to the plan previously communicated to all of you. Regarding the FPSO Cidade de Paraty, which will have 120,000 barrels of oil per day of capacity and will be placed in the Lula Nordeste area, I'm glad to say that the hull is already in Brazil, where the top sides are being integrated. This is an evolving as expected, and the unit will be operational in the second Q of 2013. Regarding the first replicants, all of them after contracting the hulls in late 2010, the consortium has now contracted the topsides for six 150,000 barrels a day of FPSOs, which will be assembled in Brazil at an extremely competitive cost, as already been communicated. Additionally, we will have another 3 chartered FPSOs to start operations in second Q2013, as I referred before, third one in 2014, by mid-2014, and another one in 2015. Now I move into slide number 5. I also want to tell you that we have already to slide number 9. I also want to tell you that we have already successfully completed the drilling of the first deviated well through the pre-salt in Lula, which truly represents an operational breakthrough. Despite no production test has yet been done, we believe this well will be important, not only in terms of productivity increase per well, and hence reducing of drilling costs, but also, and more importantly, as it can be replicated in other fields like Yara, with a direct impact on recovery rates. I recall also that we are evaluating the options to use WAG, or water alternate gas injection, and CO2 injections on the reservoirs in that area, which could represent innovative and proven techniques to increase the so much valued recovery factor. Now in slide number 10, I'm referring to Mozambique. Mozambique, we continue to deliver the progress of this exploration program well above our initial expectations, with gas in place now standing at around 50 TCFs. After drilling 4 wells so far, all with results above expectations, as I previously referred, we have already shot some seismic, or most of the seismic, in the underexplored part of the block, namely 3D seismic in the north of Mamba complex and 2D seismic in the remaining area, in order to find new drilling targets. We will continue focus on this area with appraisal drilling activity in the second half of the year, aiming at gathering data to better understand this major reservoir and to support the optimum development plan for the area, which is now our base priority. Still, I highlight that there is room for further upside in Area 4. Now, in the next slide, and regarding other exploration activity in Brazil, I want you to know that we have some interesting news flow in the second half of the year. I start with Carcará, which is being drilled in Block PMS-8 and could potentially have drilling results by August. I can advance that the data we have collected so far came above our initial expectations. The issue with Carcará is that, due to the high pressure of the reservoir, we are proceeding with additional caution, taking into account the highest safety standards that are adopted by the operator. I remind you that this discovery can unlock the commercial development of the total block. In Jupiter, a rig has been secured and it will be displaced to the drilling position in August, with results expected in the fourth Q of this year. As you know, this well is of great importance, as it will confirm the oil-water contact, potentially adding up to 1 billion barrels of oil equivalent to the already 5 billion barrels existing in the reservoir. This is even more material, considering that Galp holds a 20% stake in this field. Additionally, this well will mark an important step towards outlining the development of the field, as it will also help us to understand the CO2 distribution across the reservoir. I've already stated in other occasions that it is our intention to have a de-risking of the potential value of this reservoir up to the end of 2013. The third potential high relevant impact well to be drilled this year in Brazil will be in Potiguar, which is a frontier exploration area. Drilling will start this September. We consider that this may open a new play with significant resource potential, but let us wait for the results of this drilling program. Now I'm moving to slide number 12. Concluding with the E&P strategy update, I would emphasize that the latest acreage acquisition onshore Portugal, which represents our first portfolio addition in line with the strategy we've defined to support our production growth in the long term. We have acquired a 50% stake in the Aljubarrota Rota 3 concession, materializing a decision to hold more material stakes, having the optionality to become the operator of the block, which we anticipate to hold gas. Additionally, by entering at the early stage of exploration, we will be more exposed to the value creation potential. The first well in this area will start to be drilled next month and completed before the end of the year. It is important to note that we have a competitive advantage here because if the exploration program is successful, we will be able to monetize directly the gas in our domestic business. The farm-in agreement recently signed also provides us with options to acquire a 25% working interest in each of Moab's other six concessions in Portugal. It is only an option, I emphasize, which could further enlarge our exploration footprint. Now, let us go to our Psidis Hydrocracker project. Regarding this project, I want you to know that it is that 577 systems out of 585 were already handed over to the refinery. So 99% of the project has been totally complete. The remaining eight systems, which are now being tested at this moment, will be transferred from the contractor and the internal project team to the refinery operations throughout next week. Commission will be then undertaken under the leadership of the operation area of the refinery, and it will last 60 days, according to the program that has been agreed with the licensor of the technology. We hope, consequently, that the first gas oil will be out of the system throughout September, with stability of production expected in the last quarter of the year. This is an important milestone to our refinery and downstream business. As you know, despite the recent support of the refining margins, which the structural problems around European refining are still there, we are still suffering from excess capacity and from the chronic oil product mix imbalance. And in this scenario, the PGRADE project is of special importance, given that it provides us with greater flexibility in terms of product yield. Once we have the hydrocracker up and running, we'll be able to optimize our refining system to better capture the dynamics of between different oil products pricing that we see every day. Additionally, we will have also more flexibility in our crude mix input. Now, a word to our financial position. I want to reassure you that GALP remains with a unique capital, with a unique solid capital structure and a robust financial outlook. Our costs of debt has remained stable, while the Portuguese sovereign cost of debt increased by 3% recently. We are focused on sustaining our financial position, as we were last year, and not so comfortable because we are last year at not such a comfortable level. We have been negotiating part of our debt, being able to benefit from competitive positions. We are already addressing our 202 refinancing needs, and we remain with available credit lines that are slightly beyond 1.5 billion, billion euros, which gives us additional flexibility. To conclude, I would like to leave you with our final thoughts. Our share price has been hurt in the last couple of months, and we identify, after some internal considerations, two main drivers behind this underperformance. Firstly, the exit of one of our reference shareholders and the subsequent wrongly perceived overhang of shares. I would point out that the first 5% have already been sold to Amorim Energy at the value of 14.25 euros per share, and that Eni has more than once publicly stated that they would not be stressed sellers. Nonetheless, I want to tell you that the GALP is cooperating and assuming the role in surpassing this potential overhang, namely by speaking proactively with institutional investors and other industrial financial investors. Secondly, the euro debt crisis and the concerns around Iberian economies has further dragged our stock price well below its fundamentals. At the operational level, which is our main responsibility, we continue to be challenged in our Iberian businesses with decreasing demand. But I want to emphasize and point out that most of our value already rests in businesses away from Iberia. But our focus continues to be mainly in executing our strategy. We have been increasing our exploration focus with four potential high-impact wells, as I referred to you before, and will be completed before year-end, as it is the case of Jupiter in the third quarter and the other wells that I referred to you before. We will continue executing our Brazilian projects, and we have ensured already, as I referred before, the additional infrastructure and additional contract flexibility. We are also focused on our project in Mozambique, whose development will start to be discussed very soon. These projects will enable our production to grow, subsequently impacting our earnings. On the downstream front, we will continue to work on its efficiency and operational improvement, and we are implementing several optimization measures that will impact on our cost structure and will ensure that these businesses continue to deliver reliable and resilient earnings. Particularly in the refining business, our focus now is to have the upgrade project up and running. So our investment case remains solid, and our aim is to continue delivering the value that is expected from us. We are set to deliver profitable growth from is basically the upgrading project and the upstream business. Our downstream business profitability and resilience will support this growth. Ultimately, we plan to increase the dividend in line with the dividend policy that we announced in our Capital Markets Day. With this, I conclude my introduction and long remarks, for which I apologize this time, and we are now available to Q&A, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir. If any participant would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. To cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Can I please ask you to limit yourself to two questions per person? There will be a short pause while participants register for a question. Our first question comes from Brendan Wan from Jefferies. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's Brendan Wan from Jefferies. I've just got two questions. Just one regarding the your frontier well coming up in the Potiguar Basin. Just can you just remind us of pre-drill sort of target size, and in the past you've referred to sort of other prospects on your blocks, just in terms of what other prospects are de-risked or what sort of materiality will be unlocked through this first well if successful, please. And then just second question, just as we start to think about, rather than thinking about just the Olympics and the opening ceremony tonight, when we start to think about first half next year, just can you give us an idea of what sort of regions are moving from the evaluate to the drilling segment of your funnel, of your exploration funnel, please?
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you for the question. As far as our frontier exploration well, and I emphasize, by frontier we mean high risk, high reward, by definition, so it has assumed the two scenarios at this stage of the game. We will be drilling the well this year. We call relevant discovery anything that is beyond or above 1 billion barrels of recoverable reserves. That's the kind of the size of target that the play incorporates. As far as other targets, I would prefer at this moment to wait for this well and then review our position of that area. It is unequivocally a high risk, high reward well to be drilled. Now next year, the first half of next year will be basically sharing with you the decision of where of whether we have to drill, we decide to drill in offshore Portugal. We also have a major decision to take on BMS 21 in the pre-salt in Brazil, a well to be drilled. We will have again a frontier well in Pernambuco, not now in another basin different than the Potiguar we referred to you. And we'll have three, we will continue exploration in Mozambique. So BMS 21, Pernambuco, additional exploration in Mozambique resulting from the recently acquired 3D seismic, and Portugal, deep offshore Portugal. So quite a lot in the on plate for high risk wells. Thank you, Brandon.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Bruno Sorba from BPI. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have two questions. The first one relating to working capital. In the first quarter this year, working capital deteriorated, as you have said, if I remember correctly, that was driven by fuel prices with an impact in inventories, whereas now there is a change apparently in the average settlement of payables, as you have referred. Having a material impact in net debt in this quarter. In this sense, could you please add more visibility on what is behind the accounts payable change in terms of settlement period, and what can we expect for the full year in the evolution of working capital? And related with that, what would now be a good estimate of net debt for this year, for year end? Secondly, regarding the marketing business, comparing this first half and last year's in terms of EBITDA for the unit, the evolution seems quite resilient, particularly if we ignore the lag effect, which I guess it's very encouraging in this context. However, should we expect a similar year-on-year evolution in the second half this year, or do we expect a relevant EBITDA erosion? Extrapolating from historical data, I would say that you had an EBITDA in the second half last year in this unit, excluding refining, of about 185 million euros. I just don't know if that is consistent with your own records. Thank you very much.
Let me, Bruno, thank you for your questions, which are always clear, no? So let me tackle the working capital issue, which is of relevant. First of all, I want you to remember that we, last year, up to the closing of the transaction with Sinopec, we had a balance sheet that was stressed. So I do not want to reemphasize that, because you follow that very well for a company of our nature. So what we did last year was managing the receivables and payables with actions that sometimes costed money, which in order to ensure that we had the debt under control. No? This year, or this quarter particularly, we decided to not to take actions of that nature that costed money. So in order to optimize the economic value of the company instead of the shape of the balance sheet. So these decisions are a one-off decision, basically resetting the payables and receivables to what is standard in the industry and common and used to be common in the past. That represented an increase in working capital of something slightly above 300 billion euros. It is a one-off operation unless we manage to repeat the operations at a lower cost that we would that we could have now. This has to do with monetizing particularly some receivables. So going to the second question is the downstream resilience. It is my is not an information, it's an opinion. My opinion is that the markets in Iberia, the downstream markets in Iberia will be under stress, that we cannot change the unit margins, so we have the improvement that we can see will come from the upgrading project in the refinery, essentially, and which will be neutralized slightly by the decline in EBITDA from the downstream business in Iberia. We never talk a lot about Africa, but our EBITDA in downstream Africa is increasing. So the numbers that you've seen there are a consequence of that. In comparison with the EBITDA in the first year, last year, our downstream business was basically improved due to a better refinery margins, particularly in May and June, and to some time lag cost neutralization in the first part of the second Q. Thank you, Bruno, for your question.
Sorry, if I may, a quick follow-up. And on the net debt for year-end 12, could you provide what would be a good estimate considering the current conditions? Thank you.
You see, we do not, you see, as far as particularly if the crude oil price doesn't go up, so if it stays at the present $100 barrels a day, so the working capital would be not a penalty in our debt. So it's simply the capex that we are executing that that will determine the variation in debt. And the EBITDA, as referred by Tiago before, would be of the order of 1 billion as far as we can forecast now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob West from Sanford Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi all. My first question is about the Portuguese onshore exploration that you're looking at later this year, and the question is, what kind of chance of success do you give that, and what are the key geological risks for a success there? And my second question is about the impact of Eni's stake sale. Is there a share price at which point you would consider stepping in and buying back some of your own shares direct from Eni in order to stabilize the situation and generate value from the cheaper share price? Thanks.
Bob, Rob, thank you for your questions once again. So let's take to our project onshore. You probably, there is this company, Mohav, is an American-based company, actually controlled by another holding quoted in Calgary, has been working onshore Portugal since the early 90s. You know? So they have collected a lot of information, and they have a team on the ground. They are extremely confident about the potential of our onshore, but obviously it is of major prospects, but they could be materially relevant. We also had work in the past in the offshore onshore Portugal. We actually a couple of years ago withdrew from activities in onshore Portugal. Today, after reviewing the data available with better seismics, we decided to step in order to support the next phase of development of Mohave in the most promising block, which is Aljubarrota block. It is in a pre-salt prospect in the region, And with all the indications that it could have gas in what seems to be a obvious reservoir that we can read clearly on the 3D seismic. Let's see whether the reservoir is charged or not. But that it has all the conditions to find gas, it is our conviction that it will. The major unknown is the dimension of it. But whatever the dimension, because we have our distribution network right in the area, it will be of very low cost to integrate into the market. So let us wait for the well and then think the future. The upside is that if these prospects are successful, they are replicable. There are other formations in the neighboring areas that indicate the same geological attractiveness. We also agreed with Mojave to take at cost to have an option to enter into all other areas in the region with a 25% stake if we so decide. So we are taking one step at a time and keep the fingers crossed and trust in the judgments of our geologists. So that's the answer to your questions.
Eni.
As far as Eni, you see, what I want you to say is the following. It is Eni that has to take the decisions of how they will sell the 18% shares that they have agreed to sell through the stock market with Amorim Energia. So I cannot be the person that shares with you their strategy for that. What I can tell you that our relationship with Eni is of high quality. We have we maintain a deep cooperation with Eni, and we are available to support whatever action they decide. And we hope and we are fully confident that they will not sell shares under stress. What would be the point? What is the definition of stress? I cannot tell you that because I don't know the answer. Thank you, Rob.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Matt Lofting from Nomura. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Two questions, please. Firstly, on going back to refining, I wonder if you could just clarify the sort of uplift in the margin as a function of the progressive sort of delivery of the upgrade projects in terms of where that was in Q2 and what you expect for Q3 relative to the $2.5 to $3.5 per barrel range, I guess, in the context that the hydrocracker at Sines will sort of still be commissioning, ramping up through that period. And secondly, on the balance sheet and the credit lines that you pointed to, about €1.5 billion, could you just give us an indication of the sort of the average maturity of those lines and the structure of them? Thanks.
Okay, Matt, thank you for the questions. Let's take the refining issue and uplift in refinery margins. We have guided the market throughout quarters and many quarters on the $3.5 a barrel of uplift in margin versus the previous configuration of our refinery system. And that number is a reliable number as far as we can judge. It is effectively slightly below the average that would have happened last year. So if we replicate 2011, we would have added, if we had the hydrocracker operating, we would have added another $3.5 a barrel. That's mathematics, no? Then what is happening now? The recent improvement in the refinery margins is due to a phenomena that we don't know whether how long it lasts. It is essentially due to the increase in the value of fuel oil. Additionally, we have seen recently a phenomena which is linked to the previous statement brings the differential between heavy crude oils and then light crude oils to minimums that I ever saw in my 41 years of professional career. So we are in a period of instability. So the overall margin expected from the new facility will increase, in my view, versus a theoretical case, by $3.5 a barrel. However, that could be due to different reasons. That could be due to the increase in the base refinery margins pre-upgrading if the fuel oil crack maintains at its present level. And if that happens, the increment of that can be technically attributable to the hydrocracker will be lower. How much lower depends on the crack, the differential between heavy sour and light sweet crudes, and to the negative crack of fuel oil. So if things are as if they are today, we will have a refinery margin that will well remunerate the capital investment, but the components of that margins are attributable also to the previous configuration. Was I clear to you or confusing?
No, that's clear. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now, thank you for that. I struggled to be clear, but thank you for that statement. Now, let me take to the
maturity
of our debt. Sorry, I apologize. The maturity of the liquidity. I've just been told, Matt, that is 1 year, so above 1 year.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Jason Kenny from Santander. Please proceed with your question.
Hi there. Please add my thanks to Claudio for his support over recent years as well. In terms of questions, can you give me some guidance on the forward tax rate later in 2012, maybe going into 2013? Secondly, the depreciation decline. I was just wondering if you could give us some guidance on the direction going forward. And then finally, I noted your comments on the E&I exit in your introduction, suggesting that you're going to be proactive to lessen the potential of the hangover by talking with institutions. I just wondered if you could expand on that comment, if possible.
Jason, just a second.
Jason, so let me answer to your two questions. The first is the forward tax rate. I've been now clearly advised by my colleagues that are with me that a good guideline for this year is 30%, but going forward, that tax, global tax rate increases as the production in Brazil grows. But for the short term, taking 30% is a reliable indication. Now the E&I exit. I referred being proactive. We have that duty. We have that duty towards the shareholders to be proactive so that we can, if we see opportunities that create value to the shareholders and to E&I, that would be delighted. So what we are working is on it. So without any mandate by ENI at this stage, but with open cooperation with ENI. So that's basically what I can say about that. Thank you, Jason. I think I answered your questions.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Thomas Adolf from Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Afternoon. Just a few questions as well, please. On Mozambique, can you give a more clear timeline, i.e., you're drilling a bit more in 2013. Have you got how much resources lies just pure in your block, i.e., not subject to unitization, and how you're kind of progressing on adding more acreage in Mozambique? No, the second question on the financials. Your run rate on CapEx for the first half looks a little low. Just wondering whether your CapEx guidance is unchanged, and if possible, if you can give me a split of between, you know, exploration and development CapEx for this year and next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. So, thank you for referring to Mozambique, which is now our main focus in terms of exploration. In Area 4, we have already basically informed the market that the resources in place, the gas in place, is something between 47 and 52 TCF. So let's say 50 TCF. What I can add to that is that the reservoir and the characteristics of reservoir are not good. They are excellent. No? So you can expect a very high recovery factor. Thinking about 75 to 80% is a reliable number. So that gives you sufficient reserves. So I think now the priority is to put as fast as we can the development plan for the existing reserves. As in every occasion, when you have unitization, you have the potential of having delays, no? So I'm emphasizing the word potential, though. When you have unitization, it's all over the world, you've got negotiations to complete and potential delays. I do not see, from what I know, on the debates that are going on in order to make unitization a non-issue, I do not see that would be a cause for delay. However, if that is a cause, if that is, it causes any delay, the resources already exclusive from, not subject to unitization and exclusive to block Area 4 will be more than enough to kick off the first liquefaction facility. So, I still support the common sense is that unitization will be agreed and the optimum development project will be set up and the production online as soon as possible. By the way, the government of Mozambique is in its interest to be a facilitator because is as much interested as the operators of the two blocks to have production as soon as possible. No? I take this opportunity to emphasize that in this process of increasing relevance of Mozambique in the world gas markets, that our company has been working closely and successfully with ENH to see how we can cooperate and enlarge our exposure to Mozambique. That is a constructive discussion that is going on, and if we agree anything that is material, we will immediately present it to the market. As far as the CAPEX, effectively the CAPEX throughout the year, the overall CAPEX of the year for E&P was essentially concentrated on the second part of the year, because of the drilling program that we referred to you before. And it is approximately 50% exploration, 50% development. We will have a total capex of around 700 to 800 million euros in this year in E&P. So that's fundamentally, as you expect, the weight of development will shift, and probably next quarter we'll be saying to you that you'll be much higher in development than in exploration. That's the natural course of growth of our company to ENP. Thank you, Thomas, for your questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mark Koffler from Macquarie. Please proceed with your question.
Oh, hi, good afternoon everyone. I just had one question just coming back to E&I and your comments about cooperating with that sales process. I was wondering if there was any scenario in which a transaction may occur that may involve Galp potentially taking be it temporary or perhaps more long term, some of the equity that Eni is looking to sell.
Mark, thank you. So thank you for the question. Let me tell you one thing. Our cooperation with Eni has already existed, exists, and I hope I'm sure that it will continue existing in many other areas of the company. On this specific issue, let me say the following. For the company to acquire its own shares, that requires a shareholders meeting resolution. So the board of directors has no authority to take that decision. So it has to be proposed by shareholders or by the board to the shareholders. If that decision is taken, then we will act accordingly. As you probably are aware, or no, I'm sure that you are aware, that although on our balance sheet we have a debt of 1.2 billion euros, effectively our debt is slightly more than 200 million euros because we have a financial asset which we in Sinopec that where we lent money to Sinopec of it was $1.5 billion that is now in our balance sheet as a financial asset. So effectively, if we consider that an application of funds, we will have a debt of slightly around 300, a consolidated debt of approximately $300 million. So that's the real economic balance sheet that for an engineer like I am, no? But from the country point of view, we've got a 1.2 billion euros of debt. This issue of buying shares of the company cannot be a decision of the board, as I refer to you. If we sense that is something that we should do, which we have not done it yet, we have to convince first the shareholders. Okay? Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Hootan Yazhari from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please proceed with your question.
Hi there, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the question. It's really, I wanted to discuss around your recent acquisitions of acreage on onshore Portugal. I wanted to see how this is, whether this marks a shift in your strategy at all, and are you looking to build a core competence in unconventionals? Is this going to become a bigger portion of your future strategy and mark a move up the cost curve, or is this just something you're doing because you have a competitive advantage in Portugal and you don't want to look at further at any further unconventional plays globally? And also, I just wanted to see how you're facilitating getting the know-how. I mean, obviously, this marks a big diversion from the sorts of projects you've been involved with, largely, which have been offshore deep water, and the move to onshore unconventionals, obviously a very different sort of play type. What are you doing in order to get the expertise into the company? Thank you.
Jutem, thank you for your question. If you ask me whether this small decision, let us qualify it that way, marks a change in our strategy, I could not say that is a discontinuity, but it is an execution of the strategy. It was an ultimate point where I would like to be. We clearly are developing the competences to be what I called an explorer company, which means that having higher stakes in the high-risk exploration phase of the business. And then as we move down the value creation phases of exploration and development, we reducing the stake. So this taking a 50% stake in this project indicates that. Secondly, is our availability with operator. We have no doubt whatsoever, I emphasize that we have the knowledge and the skills to be an operator in the upstream of upstream, which is basically the pre-development phase. And we are prepared for that if the opportunity arises. The concept is always going to as early as possible to the into the exploration value creation chain, and use more human capital than financial capital in that first stage of value creation. As the requirement for financial capital increase in the evolution of the value chain, we would reduce our exposure, monetizing some of the previously created value. Was that clear to you, Jürgen?
Yes, very much so.
Thank you. Thank you, Jürgen. My good friends, I understand that that we've answered to, if not all, to yes to all your questions. I take this opportunity for wishing you good summer holidays, and I promise that next time I will not be the only one answer to your questions. Thank you very much, and let us keep in touch.
Thank you. This does conclude the Galp Energy second quarter 2012 results and strategy execution update conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.